From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 10th day of February 2017. Happy birthday to my brother Rob. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll catch up on all the agricultural news for the week, check in on what's been happening with China and DDGs. That with Tom Slate. He's the President and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council, and we'll also take a look at the weather forecast today, too, as usual, with Eric Snodgrass for a Friday afternoon. He's with Agrible right here in Urbana-Champaign, and we'll do all that on this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. And remind you, too, to visit our website at willag.org. Pick up your $30 tickets right now for our all-day Ag Outlook. It's the 7th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's a Friday afternoon, the 10th day of February. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to visit our website, willag.org. There you can pick up your tickets for the all-day agricultural outlook, or you can call this number, 800-898-1065. Online at willag.org or 800-898-1065. Either way, they're just $30, and it's a great day. Tuesday, the 7th day of March, over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. One of the folks that will join us on that day, among almost, well, a whole series of the analysts that we have on the air, more than a dozen of them, is Mike Zuzulo, a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, Mike, thanks for doing that and for being with us today, too.
My pleasure, Todd. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks for having me up there at DeKalb with the other fellows this week. It was nice to see you in person.
Yeah, that was really good to see you, too. It was a great program we had up there. We talked a little bit about crop insurance. In fact, I've been out talking with folks about crop insurance over the last month quite a bit. I wondered whether you've been watching this very much and whether it works into marketing plans or not.
I think it does, and I think it especially works this year when it comes to the lender side of the equation because, you know, everyone is very nervous or has been very nervous about what their break-evens are going to be, how much they can sell forward, and this is where the crop insurance and the selling programs from the analysis that me and others do, it would, you know, works together. I think it's interesting because, yeah, the report was a big, big deal for me in the crop insurance side because we're in the midst of figuring the base price. We're sitting at around, I think, around 1010 or 1013 for new crop bean prices right now, you know, or going into the February crop report. And my biggest concern was that the USDA would give us a negative crop report that would essentially take the wind out of the sails the second half of February. And it did the exact opposite when it came to the corn and when it came to the wheat. It actually supported the idea that corn acres need to be held on to. And with the wheat production cuts in India especially, I think it drew to the surface more and put on the radar screen more the drought conditions in the hard red wheat belt. So I think feed grains are supporting beans here the second half of February. And pretty interesting, at this above $10 level, there's only been 5 years in the last 16 that we've had better prices for soybeans in February. So we're getting up there in the top end of the range. And I think it's really important to keep note of that when it comes to what percentage you take in crop insurance and then how many bushels you sell. I'm more of a forward aggressor in terms of selling beans this year, partially because of the statistics like that.
So you did mention drought in parts of the Southwest at this point, Texas, Oklahoma, part of your state there, Kansas, I think, all feeling a little dry at this time. How are conditions where you are?
We had the code red come out again today with a burn ban once again. We aren't in the harshest of drought conditions, but it is exceptionally dry. We usually replenish moisture in this time period with a lot more rain and freezing precip, at least based upon being out here almost 4 years now, Todd. So I think that the concern is definitely there. The models right before we went on the air that were updated here just a little bit ago are suggesting some very welcome heavy rains for Oklahoma and Texas by midweek next week. That's going to be very necessary, again, because of what the USDA presented with these production cuts and the ending stocks going down. We're going to, these lower acres that we're, you know, they've been looking at for almost a month now, that means a lot more given the report. I think the supply side is much, much more back in focus. And I would say on the corn, I was very surprised that USDA did the housekeeping that they did in terms of their world grain supply demand number changes. And now in stocks to use for corn, we're not only below at 21%, we're not only below last year, but we're now below the 14-15 marketing years for the corn. And that goes back to this corn bean issue, maybe having to battle a little bit more for acres. I don't think we want to go too much below 90 million this year, given what USDA gave us here.
Yeah, below 21%, is that on the world supply demand numbers or on?
Yeah, exactly. That'd be the world stocks to use for corn. Yes.
Right. So, and we dropped, what, 135 million bushels in corn on the world ending stocks, and we're down 35 on the domestic or the U.S. stocks. Wheat was down 47 for this nation, down 172 across the planet. Still, the numbers in the United States are enormous for wheat, 1.139 billion bushels for the carryout. Even the corn still at 2.32. These are big numbers to have to deal with.
They are, and I think this is where, when we talked in DeKalb and the other meetings I've been doing this winter, is that there's bright spots in agriculture. We're starting to see that. We've got, you know, probably for the first time in maybe 2.5 years, we're actually running on 7 of 8 cylinders right now, or almost 8 of 8 cylinders, between the inflationary bug biting the investors again, the change in the Federal Reserve policy, the main reason for that. We've got the new Trump administration supporting trade again with the talk about working with Japan to kind of offset the TPP. Trump came out and talked about the one China policy. We're talking about OPEC and their supply cuts actually working. They're at 92% compliant in their last update last night. And, you know, China's imports of beans in January is 35% above last year. And I think it was a record for that month going all the way back to 2010. So we've got a lot going in favor of us right now, and it's supporting these prices. But I think your point is very well taken, that you don't want to just sit back and say, oh, it's a green light, we don't have to worry about anything. I think you really want to sell for profit this year, because we're not out of the woods yet when it comes to the macro stuff. And as you say, on the micro stuff with the supply demand, we're not out of the woods there either.
And farmers will be feeling confident enough, I think, at least in the soybean price for their crop insurance, not to do anything with those or very much. How about for corn?
As far as what, Todd?
New crop sales.
I don't think they're there yet. I think that they want to get a little bit more above the cost of production. I think we can get there, but I would say we're kind of on a shorter timeline. I would suspect that the soybean ending stocks numbers that the USDA gave us yesterday for the world will be one of the lowest numbers we see, that they will start to go back up again. And maybe even the corn ending stocks globally will start to jump a little bit because of Brazil and Argentina. It's still part of a question mark because weather still matters down there. But I think this next, you know, 15 days, both corn and beans need to be looked at really, really hard as far as getting some bushels booked.
Hey, thanks so much for being with us today. I appreciate you taking the time and look forward to seeing you at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Same here. It's not too long.
Indeed, it's not. Hey, that, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, President Donald Trump's views on Mexico may be making the agricultural industry a bit nervous, but Texas Republicans on Capitol Hill are urging folks to hold their horses. Trump has pledged to renegotiate the North American Free Trade Agreement, and his dance around the idea of border adjustment taxes and insistence that Mexico will pay for a border wall in one form or another have raised concerns that a trade war could be coming. Since NAFTA took effect, American agricultural exports to Mexico have more than quadrupled, reaching nearly $19 billion in 2015. For Texans, the threat of trouble along its 1,200-mile border with Mexico carries potential to jeopardize its relationship with its best trading partner. Its southern neighbor gets 80% of its dairy, poultry, eggs, and honey exports. Folks are worried, says House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway. He's a Texan, but Conaway and other Texas Republicans aren't, Conaway said on the sidelines of the Southwest Ag Issues Summit in Fort Worth, Texas this week, that he tells those who are concerned about the possibility of a 20% border tax on imports, for example, Not to cherry pick specific parts of the sweeping tax code overhaul that House Republicans are planning. There is a legitimate concern, he says, over pieces of it, but until we see specific impacts, it's premature to set our hair on fire. On the subject of taxes, ag may get some answers on the tax reform front soon. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said yesterday that a comprehensive plan is coming down the pike. This after the president said during a meeting with aviation industry execs at the White House earlier in the day that he'd make a huge tax-related announcement this month. That's coming along very well, the president said of tax talks. We're way ahead of schedule. I believe we're going to be announcing something, I would say, over the next 2 or 3 weeks that will be phenomenal in terms of tax. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but we'll switch gears. Lawmakers are trying once again to undo a 2010 EPA rule that requires Clean Water Act permits to spray pesticides near waterways. Representative Bob Gibbs introduced the legislation this week that would exempt from Clean Water Act permitting discharges of federally approved pesticides in and near waterways. Farmers and the pesticide industry argue the permitting is duplicative since EPA's approval process for pesticides already accounts for risk of exposure to bodies of water. Gibbs' measure, which has more than 20 co-sponsors, is an updated version of legislation that stalled out in the last Congress and is at least the fifth legislative effort to nix the permitting. Let's move to the business side of agriculture, where Tyson Foods said this week it recently received a subpoena from federal investigators, likely tied to an investigation which Tyson and other companies are alleged to have conspired to fix poultry prices. An AP report says the Arkansas-based meat producer said the investigation is in its early stages and that they're cooperating with investigators. Last September, a class action lawsuit accused Tyson, Pilgrim's Pride, and other poultry producers have conspired to fix and maintain poultry prices since 2008. And finally today, rural hospital leaders told lawmakers this week they're facing challenges to stay open for rural residents. Lawmakers said they're trying to find ways to protect and even expand healthcare into rural America. The administrators say there's no good way of eliminating the Affordable Care Act without causing millions of people to potentially lose their health care. Hospitals are typically the biggest employers in rural towns and can be a very important part of recruiting new businesses to their area. The loss of a hospital in a small town also often leads to a reduction in property values. Association leaders are also afraid the push to repeal the ACA, Obamacare, will lead to cuts in Medicare for seniors and Medicaid for the poor, which they say would hit rural hospitals much harder than their urban counterparts. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Stay with us if you can for the second half hour of our program. If not, no worries. You can hear Commodity Week online at willag.org, willag.org. It's posted there already. Still coming up today, we'll talk during Commodity Week with three analysts, including Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watsika, Illinois. Commodity Week recorded yesterday afternoon. A great program for you to listen to now or on the weekend. Stay with us on many of these radio stations. You'll hear it today or tomorrow. If not, willag.org for on-demand listening anytime that you'd like. Hey, while you're there at willag.org, you can pick up your tickets for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook. We'll have a dozen analysts. We'll introduce you to Todd Hubbs, the brand new commodity analyst from the University of Illinois. We'll talk about farm policy, too. All of your favorites will be there. Dan Zwicker is coming in from Waco, Texas. Mike Zuzulo from Kansas. And we'll have the rest of the crew, too. So come on out to the All Day Ag Outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, the 7th day of March. The cost is just $30. That includes a morning breakfast of of sorts, a cinnamon roll from the Beef House, and then the lunch, which is always great. It'll be a fantastic day. We start relatively early in the morning, around 8 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. in the Eastern time zone, but the cost is just $30, and we'll be done early in the afternoon, too. Call 800-898-1065 to get your tickets today, 800-898-1065, but frankly, it's easier for us and you, I think, if you just go to willag.org and look for Buy Your Tickets Now for the All Day Ag Outlook. Now up next, right here on the Closing Market Report, China, trade tariffs, ethanol, and DDGs. Well, the U.S. Grains Council, along with the Renewable Fuels Association and Growth Energy, are asking for help in addressing China's recent implementation of protectionist trade barriers that are shutting out U.S. exports of ethanol and distillers' dried grains. U.S. Grains Council CEO Tom Slate says they're asking the incoming U.S. trade representative to put China's recent actions near the top of the administration's China trade agenda.
It's pretty straightforward request of the president that he give some serious attention to these issues on ethanol and DDG access, but more importantly, our overall trade relationship with China in terms of agriculture. This is something that's really, really important to a lot of folks in agriculture, and I think that we've got to get this right.
Last September, China imposed preliminary anti-dumping and countervailing duties on U.S. DDGs in response to a ruling against the United States on the dumping case they initiated in the WTO. Slate says in a final ruling last month, China increased its DDGs anti-dumping duty to 42.2% to 53.7%. and its DDG's countervailing duty to 11.2 to 12%.
China instituted on January 1st, they went up to a 30% tariff on ethanol, and this is something that they are legally allowed to do by WTO rules. It's called a bound tariff of 30%. They reinstituted this. Yeah, that has shut what was, back in 2016, our number one export market for ethanol.
Additionally, Slate says the tariffs on U.S. ethanol have increased from 5% to 30% to 40%.
Pretty disappointing. It came in pretty strong. If you add everything all up, all the tariffs that now apply to DDGs going into China, you're over a 90% tariff. And that's just trade inhibiting. In fact, it's basically, except for a few creative traders who can still make it work, it's really shutting off trade of DDGs into China.
The letter written to President Donald Trump states that higher tariffs will put an immediate end to the ethanol exports to China and have already been devastating to exports of U.S. DDGs. The group asked that the tariff rates be included in any potential upcoming trade negotiations with China. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 10th day of February. It's public radio for the farming world. Buy your tickets for the All-Day Ag Outlook right now, just $30. The date is the 7th of March. It's a Tuesday. You can do that online at willag.org or by dialing this number, 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us. Tell me about the weather forecast as you see it.
Boy, I tell you, Todd, last week was a very impactful week in terms of weather. We had a big severe weather outbreak early in the week that started off near New Orleans and raced its way toward Florida. In total, there were a bunch of supercell thunderstorms that kind of rocked southern Louisiana, producing 15 tornadoes, several of which reached the EF2 to EF3 status. And as the storms kind of spread on off to the east coast, they turned into a large line of nasty thunderstorms that really impacted the cotton and peanut belt. And then we had some big surprises come midweek and toward the end of the week, where we had a snow that basically spread across the central part of the state of Illinois and over in Indiana. Actually, in Champaign, we had around 3 inches of snow, which doubled our snowfall totals for the year. So we're really down this year. And that was kind of caused by this clipper system that kind of raced out of the northern Rocky Mountains and spread through our area. And we had what we call phrenogenesis. That's where we're basically creating a tighter temperature gradient that kind of squeezes the air, forces it to rise, and gave us that snow. Then the Northeast, this was the other big surprise, had a pretty big blizzard. Most of the early week forecasts had that system too far to the east to really have a big impact, but then the last couple of model runs brought it right back on shore, dumping quite a bit of snow from New Jersey through New York, all the way up into Connecticut, toward Massachusetts, and then finally hitting Maine. And then the same time that was going on, the West Coast was getting rocked yet again. So there's just a lot of precipitation spreading across the country this past week, some of it pretty nasty. Now let's do some big picture stuff first, okay? First thing I want to talk about is the latest U.S. drought monitor map that was released on Thursday. When we look closely at this, we see that we've done a great job, the atmosphere's done a great job, at eliminating the drought conditions that were really, really nasty in the Southeast and really quite bad in California. Now, that's not completely gone, but major, major improvements. But what I've been noticing is that in Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Missouri, the drought has persisted for most of this winter. And that drought is also kind of pushing up into Colorado and Kansas. Now, the drought in Colorado and Kansas, that's going to be a factor to be looking at when we get into to the what wheat's going to do later on this spring. But that Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Missouri drought, I'm watching closely, because if we don't erase that by the time we get into May, I'll be concerned that drought like that could have the potential to move north and to move east into the Corn Belt. It's just something I'm watching. Let's keep an eye out on it. Now, when we talk about spring weather, I want to show you kind of a blended forecast we have from four separate modeling techniques. And so let's get into March, April, and May and see what we've got. Right now, there's a better chance than not that we'll have a slight warm bias for spring across Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, in fact, for most of the Midwest. In fact, I think that kind of warm bias of the forecast will carry across most of the East Coast as well. Now, the Dakotas are something I'm watching a little bit closer, so let's get back, you know, more toward the northern plains here. The reason why I'm concerned about the Dakotas is that right now they got quite a bit of snow on the ground. They have remained cold. In the last 2 years, they had a warm bias to their March, April, and May. And that meant that snow melted earlier, they got rid of their muddy conditions earlier, and they had a pretty decent start to their season and lower prevent plant acres. What I'm concerned about is that in 2017 here, we're not seeing that, which may mean the markets might find that as an interesting story to start the season if the Dakotas return toward more normal prevent plant acres. Again, just something to be watched at this point. We need to keep a very, very close eye on that. Now, those are some bigger picture things, but let's get back toward the weather for this week. For the United States, really here in the Midwest, we're going to get back on a warming trend. Yeah, we got some pretty cool days the last couple of days with that snow, with that high pressure dominating, but we basically have a ridge that's going to try to push its way to the east, allowing some southerly flow and warming us back up. Saturday and Sunday around Champaign, we expect highs in the 40s, maybe in the lower 50s, which is well above average for this time of year. By Saturday, we're watching a low-pressure system take shape in the Ohio River Valley, and it's going to push off to the northeast again, giving them another big shot at snow in the northeast. But the bigger picture here that I'm looking at is that when I make my kind of longer-range forecast for the rest of February and the beginning of March, I'm seeing a better chance for us to see more days of above-average temperatures than below-average temperatures, which is going to leave a lot of people saying, where in the heck was winter? Now, remember, March still can bring some pretty big snowstorms unexpectedly, even after some warmer weeks. So we got to keep a very close eye on that. But overall, I think February is going to have a warm bias to it, and so is the start of March.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.